One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 30 after the hour, and I'm going to have to get a new introduction recorded because the group that was formerly known as Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, like Prince, has changed their name. It's now Law Enforcement Action Partnership, and joining us to talk about it, we've got Lieutenant Commander Diane Goldstein, a board member of LEAP. How you doing, Diane?
Hey, Russ, it's nice to hear your voice. We haven't chatted since, I believe, New York.
Yeah, that's been a while. It's always good to talk to my friends from LEAP. And, you know, the last time we saw each other, you and myself and Neil Franklin, the executive director, you guys were kind of mulling this over that you were going to be changing your action partnership. You're going to change your mission. Tell folks about that process, about what made you want to change the group from being Law Enforcement Against Prohibition to Law Enforcement Action Partnership.
You know, this process, even though we were discussing it kind of in like we're mulling it over, I think that we from the board of directors had been having this conversation for about the last year plus. And one of the issues was that we see as part of our role is bringing more law enforcement over to our side. And what we were seeing is we were getting a ton of pushback because we were just against something and not necessarily proposing policy. So since 2002, although we've done an amazing job of going out and educating law enforcement and lawmakers and the public, is we still had active duty criminal justice professionals who were reluctant to join us because of a lot of the stigma associated with substance use or abuse, so to speak. And so this was a very carefully crafted change that resulted from us really looking at our mission, our vision, and how best to sustain this organization long term to really create change in the criminal justice system. And so since our launch, the elected Seattle City Attorney, Pete Holmes, has joined us as a speaker. Since our launch just, you know, less than a month ago, is we've had several active duty police officers that, in fact, have joined us that are now safe to do so without retribution from their law enforcement organizations.
That's great news. So the idea here then is not LEAP abandoning the position of fighting against the drug war, but folding that into a broader message.
Yes. So let me be very clear that ending the drug war is and will always be the number one goal of our new organization, which is not a new organization. I think I was talking to another activist, Sharmi Golson, when we launched, and I sent her our new website. She says, well, what's really different? And there really isn't anything except for now we're in a place where it's not just discussing the harms of the drug war, but clearly identifying many of the solutions and the policies that we can change. So drug policy will always be the root of what we're trying to bring down. But we're now, rather than, you know, cutting down this very diseased tree that has all these collateral consequences, we want to build good policy. And we need active duty law enforcement and criminal justice professionals to do that, as well as legislators.
Many of the discussions that I've had with folks from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition over the past couple of years have dealt with the tragic shootings that have happened, unarmed black men, oftentimes these are drug related, or at least the investigation began because drugs were assumed to be related. Was that a motivating factor for you, for Neil Franklin? I know he came up in the hard streets of Baltimore. Was that a motivating factor for when you broadened this mission?
You know what? I think, I'll speak for myself, yes, and for Neil as well, is I think what this allows us to do is to talk about how we change law enforcement training. You know, it is, I'm in grad school right now, and it's interesting that I'm writing a paper on the subculture of law enforcement and how we effectively change organizations from within. And this allows us to broaden the scope and basically say, hey, look, there are some state-of-the-art law enforcement academies that are out there. For example, state of Washington has an academy that has completely changed the dynamics of their law enforcement training to emphasize the protection of life. That, you know, that's our first priority. And they have contributed to the growing research on de-escalation and communication and how that can, in fact, reform law enforcement agencies and make both police officers safer and the community.
Well, that's something I'm glad to hear, because it's been something I've been paying attention to a lot in the interviews that I've done. And this is, you know, just one of many areas where I believe law enforcement action partnership can be helpful to us. What are some other areas of policing that LEAP might get involved with?
So civil asset forfeiture reform, we've been talking about it for years, and it's never really been a primary focus of our organization. That is now one of the significant pillars of what we're going to be addressing. You know, I think obviously you wrote an article within the last couple days on the statement by 45 to the sheriff on we're going to destroy a senator's career because he's proposed reforming a clearly supported bipartisan policy. You know, both Republicans and Democrats alike are supporting reforming and ending civil asset forfeiture reform. So that's going to be a huge tenet, because we don't want to see the rollbacks that may occur if we don't reform forfeiture at the state level.
I'm glad you bring up the civil asset forfeiture. I've been putting together some audio from the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, and I found this clip from him from one of the hearings they had on Capitol Hill regarding what they call the equitable sharing program of asset forfeiture. Let me play that for you and then ask you a question, get some comment on that. Just one second.
The federal government has a good system for forfeiture.
Try that again. Oh, no. Wouldn't you know, it froze up on me just when I was trying to play that for you. Let's see if we can get that clip to play for you one more time here. Let's try. No, it doesn't want to play. Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and just ask you the question directly. It appears that Attorney General Sessions is quite fond of the equitable sharing program and lamented the Eric Holder's direction to dismantle that program and stop the sharing with the state and local authorities of the assets that are seized in criminal cases. This doesn't bode well, I think, for any movement on this asset forfeiture. Have you guys heard anything different, or have any plans to press this with the Department of Justice?
So, you know, it's very interesting. One of the things that I've seen in the last couple of years, not just on the issue of cannabis reform, but around the issue of civil asset forfeiture reform, is that the states increasingly are passing significant civil asset forfeiture reform legislation. And in large aspects, I think that's going to be the way that we push Congress to eliminate, which is really the long-term goal. There should be no such thing as civil asset forfeiture, you know, unless it's agreed upon, you know, fine or some other type of forfeiture that we've used in the past. But the notion that someone's property is guilty and you have to prove it innocent violates every tenet of our Constitution.
Absolutely agreed. And it was pointed out that in that remark that President Trump made to the Sheriff's Association, the sheriff had brought up a Texas state senator who proposed, and I don't think this is too radical a notion, he had proposed that, gosh, maybe somebody ought to be guilty before we take their stuff. And President Trump dismissed that and said, can you believe it? And can you even understand the people on the other side of this issue? What is it with these people? They don't understand the basics of our constitutional democracy.
Well, I think that part of the issue is you have to go back and look at the history. It's, you know, like every other broad-based law that we've enacted, is even the founders of Brad Cates and Yoder, John Yoder, who started the federal civil asset forfeiture program in 1980, state today, and in fact, Brad Cates is working with Institution of Justice, and I've done some work with Brad around this issue. They state today that the program is so corrupted that it needs to be completely eliminated, that there is no fixing the federal equitable sharing program. And so I think what's interesting is with people like Brad Cates and John Yoder, and, you know, we're finding partners in both sides of the aisle. You have to remember in California last year, we had a 2-year battle with law enforcement on this issue. And we had a very interesting partnership that I would walk in to legislators' office with a member of the Heritage Foundation, the lobbyist for the Drug Policy Alliance, myself, and a member of the ACLU. So all of us may not agree on a lot of different issues, but on this issue, it's very clear there's a huge support in the public and in politicians to end the practice.
There does seem to be a lot of momentum or a lot of energy from the law enforcement community, though, to keep this practice. It seems to me that all this practice does is it basically incentivizes state and local authorities to help the feds go after their drug cases, when without that booty, they might not do so.
Correct. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. One of the things that we managed to do in California legislation is we actually enhanced the protections for California residents who may be impacted by federal joint narcotics task forces. So in California right now, if you own any real property or have cash up to $40,000, it requires a conviction, whether it's on the federal level or on the state level. And so we would like to continue to, you know, raise that monetary amount in order to continue to provide protections. But that was a compromise that was kind of a win-win for the legislators and law enforcement.
Another issue in our criminal justice system that has been exacerbated through the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs is the use of mandatory minimum sentencing. And this is something else that came up in a couple of the reviews or a couple of the hearings with Senator Sessions at the time. And he was also a bit apoplectic about the idea that we would be reducing mandatory minimums, not throwing the book at people. What concrete steps can we take, and what steps are LEAP taking to fight against this abuse of mandatory minimums?
You know what is across every state, and I think this is going to be one of those things that is again, going to be a state-by-state fight, is we're working with coalition partners, the ACLU and other, I think it's Americans for Safe Justice. You know, the CKI institution, the Charles Koch Foundation, is working to reform the criminal justice system, right on crime. Is we've developed some very, very significant relationships that will help prevent that. And I think, like everything that happens at the state level, we can protect our citizens under the 10th Amendment and then use that as pressure for the federal government to butt out of the criminal justice system around the issue of drug use. You know, it is for years, I think that they have overreached. And I think that's my concern with 45's administration is he honestly has no clue about policy, and he's reverting back to, you know, the Richard Nixon law and order, throw away the book on people. And, you know, I heard his speech to the Major Chiefs Association, and it really concerns me to hear that language again of we're going to be ruthless on drug offenders instead of where we finally got the Department of Justice and the Drug Czar's office to start talking about chronic substance abuse more from an issue of harm reduction and compassion, and recognizing that we can't incarcerate our way out of this issue.
And that's the rhetoric we're getting from now Attorney General Sessions in the previous couple of years in the hearings. He has many times evoked the memory of Ronald and Nancy Reagan, particularly singling out the Just Say No program. He says it cut the drug use by half. It cut the murders by half. Crime went down. He thinks the Just Say No era was when America was great. And I think he wants to make America great again. Are you worried about that from that perspective, the rhetoric perspective?
I'm hugely worried about the rhetoric perspective. And, you know, I think that the next couple of years, because, you know, I'm not projecting out 4 years, I'm projecting out to 2018 and the midterm election, is what I'm hoping is, you know, his use of executive orders, which has been horrific, much worse than 44's were, in addition to the rhetoric, may very well be the catalyst for change in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. And then so really the target and the strategy is hold that line. Man, I'm feeling like this is football at this point. You know, we've gone from playing offense to playing defense, and we have got to hold that line and not lose any of the gains that we made.
As a Packers fan, I don't want to hear about defense. We could use some over there too in Green Bay. So let's talk a little inside baseball now on this, because the evolution, LEAP was first formed in what, 2002? Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so LEAP was formed as Law Enforcement Against Prohibition in 2002, and early on, there was kind of a schism in between, well, some of us think we should legalize pot, but maybe not the other drugs, whereas LEAP was like, no, we should legalize all drugs. As you've moved forward now and expanded this into Law Enforcement Action Partnership, is there an internal break as well from some that say, hey, we're straying too far from the mission of ending the war on drugs?
There has been a schism, but you have to understand is our mission is still to legalize all drugs. Our mission is to end the drug war. That's not going to change. And by broadening the mission, I think it's going to make us stronger, and it's going to make us, you know, in the last couple of years, we have not been outliers on the issues of cannabis. But we continue to be outliers on the issues of, you know, what do we do with all the other drugs? And I think this gives us the ability to continue to craft the message that our drug policies are a human rights disaster, you know, here and abroad. Plain, simple, end of story. That is not going to change at all. And I think it's also going to allow us to be smarter. You know, I use the strategy and talking about states' rights all the time, not just on the issue of cannabis, but on the issue of every other drug. And in California, our, you know, substance use or how we want to enforce our drug policies is different than how New York or Idaho does, you know. And so it is, I think we're the next couple of years, we're going to make more gains on the state levels, and I think we're going to lose a little bit on the federal level. But there's hope. I mean, Dana Rohrabacher and several other Democrats just, you know, once again is introduced a bill to respect states' rights, and I think that's how we're going to be able to sell other Republicans on it.
I sure hope that's the case. My only fear of a backlash on the states' rights argument is somebody saying, yeah, but doesn't Idaho, Kansas, and Nebraska have the right to not have legal weed pouring over their borders? we shall see. We'll see how that turns out. It sounds to me as though the move to law enforcement action partnership, broadening the mission, is going to bring in more law enforcement professionals. And what I'm hoping to see is maybe some more of the active duty police officers getting involved. Is that something that you're hoping for or seeing happen from this transition?
We're already seeing it happen, and we're actively out there meeting with people who are active duty criminal justice professionals, whether they're, you know, district attorneys or judges or police officers or DEA agents. We already have been very, very strategic in establishing relationships with people even before this launch. And so I think that's going to be very beneficial. And if it's people that maybe can't speak out at this point, they're opening up their own network to us as well. And so I think that's really critically important. And, you know, it's, I want to go back. One of the things that's been very interesting relative to this issue of what's going on with the new administration, I've also been very pleased to see, you know, law enforcement agencies say things like, you know what, it's not my agency's role to help the federal government with immigration. Charlie Beck just said it at LAPD. The new San Francisco police chief just said it. In fact, I just read a policy memo from the Major Chiefs Association. In fact, the Los Angeles County District Attorneys Association came out and said the exact same thing. So, you know, I don't think Trump has every, police agency or administrator in his pocket. I think law enforcement, I'm hoping, is going to be able to do the right thing and say there are things that is within our purview and this just isn't one of them and we're not going to help you.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Commander Diane Goldstein. She is a board member with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. You can learn more about them at leap.cc. And we're speaking to her in the state of California. And that brings me to the next subject, the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. And it looks as though a big priority of his Department of Justice is going to be immigration, especially considering how much Donald Trump has made that an issue in his campaigning. A recent article with John J. Hudak from the Brookings Institute backed that up, saying that that'll be probably one of their biggest fish to fry. And in response to that, your state, the state of California, is moving forward with a plan to be a sanctuary state. And I don't go too far into the immigration issue here, but basically saying, flouting the federal government and saying, we're not going to have any California law enforcement help out with the immigration issue. Do you think that this could be California versus the federal government on immigration? And if so, would they go to bat for us on the marijuana issue as well?
Well, you know what, I think our new attorney general, during his confirmation hearing in California, so the California Attorney General Becerra said that he will defend the California marijuana laws to the federal government. So I honestly do believe that the state of California has basically said, because we're going full board in control and regulation and implementation of not just MCRSA, but Proposition 64, as is other states. And so I think one of the things that'll be very interesting to see, what I would like to see down the road, not just in California, but in other states, is that legislators do policy just like we're doing on the issue of immigration that says that bars local law enforcement with cooperating with federal law enforcement efforts to, destroy our regulated medical marijuana or adult consumption industry. That we can't prevent the federal government from coming into our state, but we sure don't have to help them. And frankly, the federal government does not have the resources to do it. And so that's going to be the big issue is, you know, if we can continue to push that line and say, look, you know, if the federal government wants to come in and arrest cartel members because they're illicitly growing marijuana in our state or national parks, let them. I don't have any issue with that. You know, but if they want to come in and go after like a James Slattic or other people who have been licensed by the state, then I have a huge issue.
All right. We're speaking again with Diane Goldstein from LEAP, and we're approaching the top of the hour. So I want to make sure we get a couple of other subjects in here before I let you go, because, you know, now that your mission is broadened, we got so much more we can talk about. There's things that I've been concerned about, and I'm hoping LEAP is concerned about them as well. And that would have to do with the use of the SHU, the secure housing unit, the solitary confinement. Is LEAP going to be getting involved in the issues like that with, you know, fair imprisonment and torture and such?
You know what? We haven't gone that deep and nuanced. I know that we have individuals from LEAP that have spoke out about issues like that. And so I think it's going to depend on, you know, is there new legislation that we can support that may impact that? You know, is it something that our coalition partners are proposing? You know, not every single policy issue is one that I think that we're going to actively do, but we may work in conjunction with someone else.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess in a broader sense, I'm trying to gauge how broad does this new partnership go to? Is it issues of just policing, the courts, the prisons, the probation? I mean, how far are we going to cover?
So here's the pillars. Look at the pillars. It's good. Police accountability, transparency, you know, issues like body cameras, training, you know, mass incarceration, you know, is working with organizations, whether it's FAM or someone else, on the issues of clemency. And we, like, for example, you know, during the lead up to Obama leaving, we were actively writing clemency letters for prisoners who were in prison at the federal level. You're going to see issues of safe injection facilities, harm reduction, needle exchange programs, you know, developing maybe other crime prevention policies that you know, the use of how do we define and evaluate an effective law enforcement agency. So the issues of community policing and how best to implement those. So I think that there's a lot of different things that we can fit under those pillars, so to speak.
Absolutely. And the one final topic here, the Department of Justice under the previous attorneys general have done some reviews of certain police departments like Chicago and Baltimore, where they found problems with pattern and I forget the other term.
Practice.
Pattern and practice.
Pattern and practice.
And the latest word I heard from the Trump administration was they were going to get away from that and go to, you know, it's only just a few bad apples and just singling out the bad apples rather than, you know, noticing that the rest of that saying is spoils the bunch. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So you have to look at the history of consent decrees in law enforcement, and largely they have revolved around the issue of which party was in power. And so we didn't have an emphasis on consent decrees during, you know, Reagan, Bush, and Bush, but we did maybe during Clinton and Obama. And so I think Trump isn't necessarily being an outlier in it. I don't agree with it. I think that consent decrees are, in fact, a necessary part of the proper role of the Department of Justice in evaluating the legitimacy of law enforcement agencies. And I think that's one that down the road, we're really going to have to, both personally and as an organization, we're going to have to watch and work with other advocates like the ACLU or other organizations who will clearly be bringing up lawsuits in order to rectify some of the policing problems like they've done in the past.
Well, that's fantastic news, and we're just about out of time here, but I want to thank Diane Goldstein from LEAP for joining us, and congratulations on the new mission, and good luck moving forward in the future.
No problem, Russ, and hey, by the way, I'm going to be in Portland in April.
Oh, I will see you here in April.
I sure will. We'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks to your listeners.
Yeah, you betcha. And that's all the time we've got for this hour. And I've got all sorts of weird things happening with my automation software. So if I seem distracted, it's because I am. Things don't want to work when I want them to work. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have our hour two here, our Toker Talk Radio, coming up right after I can make things go. Go, I say, go.